compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Come on, man.
All right. Give me a chance. 888-914-9149 is the number to call to be on the air. 888-914-9149. Emails patrick@relevantradio.com. I have a note here from Caroline. She's listening in Philadelphia. Thanks for sending me a note, Caroline. She says, and she's referring to a call I took earlier today in the first hour. Actually, no, it wasn't a call. It was an email from somebody who works at a company that does inspections. And among the places they have to inspect is an abortion clinic. And she was wondering, you know, is that morally compromising for her? Even though she herself doesn't have to do those inspections, should she opt out? Should she find another job is what she asked. So here is Caroline's comment. She says, well, I abhor anything related to abortion. If the woman does inspect abortion clinics and finds that a clinic is out of compliance, could that not potentially be a step toward closing it down? Yes. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that makes total sense. She is more likely to not let even the smallest transgression go unnoted, while someone supporting abortion could, quote unquote, look the other way. That's true. I like to think that most women who go to a clinic for an abortion are most likely feeling they have no choice, but their health could be at stake if, say, the place is not in compliance with cleanliness, etc. I agree, and I'll pause there. I've seen, in the media over the years, any number of stories of women who die because of unsanitary conditions in an abortion clinic, or just ineptitude, incompetence in some cases, where she bleeds to death. So it's not a safe place, an abortion clinic. It's never a safe place for the unborn baby, but sometimes it's not safe for the woman. So that's to your point. And Caroline says, the analogy to firefighters putting out a porn shop fire is not quite the same. Well, that's true. No analogy is perfect, but I think it's a serviceable one. She says they would be protecting an establishment that propagates sin, but the woman's inspecting an abortion clinic is protecting the women who go there, not the establishment. I would differ with you on that point. And here's why. Because the purpose of the inspection, yeah, you're right. There is a side effect of the protection of women who go there. That is true, but it's a side effect. The purpose of the inspection, as I understand it, is for the abortion clinic to stay open for business. So I believe that the first line of the benefit that such an inspection would give would be for the establishment, and only secondarily would be for the protection of women. That's the stated purpose of an inspection. Hey, we're going to go here and make sure that everything's clean and tidy so that people will be healthy. But I would say maybe a better way to look at it, Caroline, would be that there are two sides of the same coin for that reason. Anyway, she says, God often works in mysterious ways when and how we least expect it. What if the inspecting woman is given the opportunity to prevent an abortion through her work? I know that in some places it's illegal to even pray silently outside an abortion clinic, but this woman could pray silently as she performs the inspection inside the clinic, asking God to help her find inconsistencies and, of course, pray for the women going there, the workers, for them to change, and, of course, for the unborn babies. I don't disagree with any of that. I don't. But I do nonetheless suggest that given her scruples, she's not scrupulous, but given her scruples about what if I would ever be tasked with inspecting the abortion clinic, and I think I can make the argument that the immediate benefit of the inspection, if it's positive, would be for the abortion clinic to stay open and make money. Secondarily, even though that's the purpose of the inspection, the secondarily would be the health of the women. So I can understand why she wouldn't want to do that. Now, if you, and it sounds like you are, if you're that kind of woman who would go into this kind of situation with these intentions and these goals in mind, so much the better. And I could see where you might be doing something really good by doing that. But at the same time, I personally would respect the scruples of men or women who might say, I just don't want to go in there and do that because I would be helping this abortion clinic and I don't want to do that. So I'm glad you raised these other issues. They are important as well. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Carl now in Richmond. Good morning, Carl.
Morning, Patrick.
Ooh, you know what? Your phone is just not cooperating. I'm hearing every other word. So, young Thomas, could you pick up with Carl, please? And we'll see if we can't get him sorted out, and we'll come back to you, Carl. Liz in Northern California, welcome.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes, hi.
I have a question. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome.
So, I have a question for you regarding romantic comedies.
Okay.
It was once said to me that it's similar to a single woman who watches romantic comedies. It's similar to a man watching porn. And that kind of made me sad. And to be honest, I put it in the back of my head because I do like watching romantic comedies. So I wanted your take on that, if you could comment.
Sure. I mean, I'll give you what I think. I don't think that the two are equivalent. Now, obviously, if it's a romantic comedy that involves objectionable pornography and things like that, well, then I can see a kind of parallel there. But if it's, you know, a romantic comedy that doesn't include those things, it's just a romantic comedy, it doesn't equate with the evil of pornography for obvious reasons. And what I mean by that is I think it's obvious enough that I don't have to explain why pornography is evil. You and I would agree on that point, right? Okay. And because kids are listening and whatnot. So I don't see a parity between the two. Parity, P-A-R-I-T-Y. I can see an analogy, though. And the analogy might go something like this. Tell me if this is what you're thinking, is that men are more visual. This is sort of the trope that everybody says. It's, you know, kind of like the common view of things, whether or not it's actually true, but that men are more visual and they are more attracted to pornography for that reason, whereas women are more emotional. And I'm trying to speak in terms of what the culture might say. I'm not saying that I necessarily hold these views, but that for women, it's sort of like a pornography of the emotions as opposed to visual images. It's the notion of romance and all the things that go into that, because as the saying goes, women are more moved by those things than men are. Would that fit with what you understood that person to mean when he or she said that?
Yes. Yes.
So that's where I would say, no, I don't agree with that. I'm conscious of the fact, and I'm willing to agree that for some women who would never be interested in pornography as such, for them, rom-coms or romance novels, you know, on the cover is the hunky man and the woman with heaving bosoms, and it's all very torrid and all of that. I mean, sure, that can be the source for serious sin. It could be an occasion of serious sin for women. But a regular run-of-the-mill romantic comedy where there's nothing in itself that's objectionable, I don't think it comes anywhere close to the gravity of looking at pornography.
Okay.
Am I answering the question you're asking, or am I missing something here, Liz?
No, you're answering it very well, because I was kind of confused. Even because single girls, they want happily ever after. And that doesn't always happen. And happily ever after is different for every woman. But my heart kind of sank when they said that, because I was thinking that, you know, it's nice to kind of tune out and, you know, think of what could be type thing.
Yeah. So the fantasy world, the fantasy imagination of romance and such.
Yeah, so, and I don't let it get in between the Lord and my prayers or anything like that. It's just something that I prefer to watch rather than, you know, something that's political or something like that.
And, you know, there are, I don't know if I'd call it a romantic comedy, but there are, for example, instances in the Bible that could be understood in that way, kind of a tragic comedy. So we know, for example, that Jacob, go to Genesis 29 and you can read a kind of romantic comedy where Jacob wants to marry, he wants to marry Rachel. She's the beautiful daughter of Laban, and he wants to marry her. So he makes this deal with Laban that he will work, I think it was 7 years, if I'm not mistaken, and if he worked for him for 7 years, he would give him his daughter's hand in marriage. Well, he does. And then on this wedding night, he finds out that Laban tricked him and substituted the plain daughter, Leah. And so now you might say Jacob is kind of stuck with her. He doesn't really want her, doesn't really love her, and he has to work another 7 years to get Rachel. Now, I don't know if I'd call that a romantic comedy, but that could be made into a romantic comedy, kind of an odd one. But even in the Bible, you see some things where the love of the heart is unrequited, or there's tragedy, or there's, you know, difficulty in obtaining the love of your life kind of thing. And I'd say this is an example of that. So even the Bible has some themes that are of this nature. So that's why I'm saying I don't think that watching a romantic comedy that's not injurious to your morals or anything would be a problem.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I'll give you one parting thought, as long as I'm thinking about it, Liz. It's worth noting anyway, St. Teresa of Avila, she was raised in a very well-to-do home. Her father was wealthy and such. And her mother, as she relates in, as St. Teresa relates in her memoirs, her mother was addicted to romance novels. And they weren't scurrilous, you know, they weren't pornographic or anything. But her mother was addicted to romance novels, and she herself, as a girl, became addicted to romance novels. And later in life, after she had become a religious, and she had an kind of an out-of-body experience or a near-death experience, something like that, in which she saw where God had prepared a place for her in hell for her many sins. And she had a conversion, of course, and she wound up being a great saint and a doctor of the church. But she, as I remember reading this, she ties it in with her girlish love of romance novels and how that had robbed her of fervor and devotion in some ways. Even though she did become a nun and all that, there was still some connection to those, the love of romance novels and the frivolity of it and things like that. So I think that's worth taking note of. There may be something there that if you or somebody listening thinks, you know, I'm just a little too attached to these things. I'm living too much in the world of fantasy, romance, and things like that. That could be a good corrective too.
Okay. That's noted. And that's kind of a sign. That's a sign. So I'm going to take that as a sign and maybe pick up my rosary a little more and say a third rosary or a fourth rosary before deciding whether or not to those shows. Yeah.
What does St. Paul say? He said, and I know you want to get going, but he says, you know, all things are lawful for me, but not everything is good for me. And his point is that in Christ, we have freedom to do things, but we have to be discerning because not everything that you're free to do is actually good for you or beneficial to you. And one thought that's in my mind all the time is the question, if I'm faced with an option to do something or not do something, does this serve my goal? My goal being, I want to go to heaven. I want to be with God forever. I want to strive to live a virtuous life. Does this thing right here in front of me right now, does this serve my goal? And if it serves my goal, yeah, let's do it. If it doesn't serve my goal or if it defeats my goal, then I would try to not do it. And if it's neutral, it neither serves nor harms the goal, then it's sort of up for grabs. you know, if it's not contrary to God's will for me, but it's not necessarily going to bring me closer to him, then it's like a judgment call. So.
I love that. That you're just life-giving. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're nice, Liz.
That's
Thank you
beautiful.
For that. And thanks for your patience with my my long answer. I'm known for long answers, so thank you
All
for
right,
that.
Yeah.
Was that Tom Hanks? Who was it?
Okay.
Sounds like me. 888-914-914. Let's take a break. Let's do that. We'll fall back and regroup, and we will reconvene in just 2 minutes right after this quick timeout.
Thank you very much.
Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
This is not a romantic comedy soundtrack, I can tell that.
This feels more like a thriller.
Okay. The Patrick Madrid Show.
No. Coming this summer.
We do have the occasional explosion on this show, though. That's true. I like it. 888-914-9149. Call that number. We'll have you on the air. Lickety split. Or we'll try anyway. This is a note that comes in from Joel, and Joel is listening on the Relevant Radio app. I love that kids are starting to call into your show more often now and how you take the time to answer their questions and mentor them. It's a powerful ministry. You have the future of our faith in the next generation. Every kid you help mentor and help bring into a relationship with our Lord will most likely grow up with a pro-life view and the moral grounding to be a good Christian and help multiply your ministry. Well, please God, I sure hope that's true. You're doing beautiful work, you guys. Keep up encouraging the kids to call in and learn. Let's get these kids into the front rows in our churches every Sunday. And then all in caps, thank you. I appreciate that, Joel. Thank you. And here's what we do here at Relevant Radio. We want to be a full spectrum, full service radio network. That's what we seek to do. So all ages, all backgrounds, not all Catholic listeners, that's for sure. We have lots of listeners who are not Catholic, and we warmly welcome them. And we're grateful to everybody who listens to the program, even the kiddos. And one thing that I've noticed is that it's not uncommon, I hear at least from parents, where listening to Relevant Radio, and I like it when it's this program, but any program on Relevant Radio, I hear from parents, they say, that's part of our kids' curriculum. You know, they listen to your show either on the way to, it wouldn't be from live anyway, unless they're listening on the Relevant Radio app, listening to a replay, but to listen to the program on the way to school in the morning, or to listen to the program for the kids who are homeschooled and it's part of their curriculum, maybe even just informally part of it, but it helps them. And that makes me really happy. It makes all of us really happy here at Relevant. So we're grateful for that. Thank you. And we'll go back to the phones. Let's go to Caroline in Los Angeles. Good morning, Caroline.
Good morning, Patrick.
Hi.
My daughter, an avid reader and such a good person, calmly explained to me how she'd read a couple of books that made the assisted suicide very reasonable to her. And I would like to send her a book with a different perspective. I didn't want to lecture her.
Yeah.
On the phone. Mm-hmm. But I guess I'm not as avid a reader as she is. And that's what I'm looking for, something I can send her to give her a different perspective, another way of looking at things.
Yes. Well, I mean, the first book that I thought of when you asked me the question was from the late, great Fulton Sheen, Life is Worth Living. I forget now whether it was Your Life is Worth Living or Life is Worth Living. I think it's Your Life. That's a classic in the genre. It's a classic because he very masterfully, he explains in a variety of ways, you know, why are you here at all? Why are you here? Mm-hmm. And if you had the Baltimore Catechism when you were young, like I did when I was young.
I did.
You know, remember that? Okay.
I have one.
Good for you. That's great. I wish every Catholic family had one. So the question, why did God make me? God made me to know him, love him, and serve him in this life and be happy with him in heaven in the life to come. So our answer as believers to suicide is multifaceted. Let's go through a few of these things, and then I'll share with you a book. Our answer to that is, as Jesus said, I have come that you should have life and life in abundance. So the Lord wants us to have life. And often, for some people, life involves suffering. And yet, the redemptive value of suffering, such as maybe the suffering somebody's experiencing that might lead them to contemplate suicide, even that, as terrible as it sometimes may be, can be, if you put it to the right use, if you offer it to the Lord, can be hugely meritorious and purifying and salvific. And this, I think, may be the message that somebody who's contemplating suicide is not seeing or thinking about, and that is that your life is worth living, even with its difficulties, especially with its difficulties. It's worth living. I often, Caroline, think about my own wife, for example, but all the other women who have children. You've had children, presumably, and you know, of course, you don't need a man to tell you, but you know the pain of labor and delivery. It's painful. I've seen it, and it's not pleasant, and I can't imagine doing it, but it's worth it. The suffering that goes into labor and delivery and the 9 months leading up to it with morning sickness and, you know, you feel like your hip's practically dislocated and all the other difficulties, it's worth it when that brand new little baby boy or girl emerges and you now have your son and daughter right in front of you. You can see them. It's worth it. And that's just an analogy, but I think everybody can relate to that. There are times in life where you go through sometimes really severe suffering, but it's worth it in the long run. And suicide is never a viable option to that. It may seem that way. And for many people who take their own lives, it does seem that way because of fear or extreme pain or some other outside influence that's making them contemplate something that they would otherwise never think about doing. But the answer to this issue is life and love. God loves you. He wants you to be happy. Sometimes his plan for you involves suffering, sometimes even severe suffering. But it's worth it in the end to not give up, to not pull the plug on yourself, and to ask the Lord for the strength, the grace, the encouragement to be able to carry the crosses that we have. And I know it's easier said than done, but it can be done. And the Lord says, I will help you. So I think that must always be the message, that it's the Lord who loves you. He wants you to be happy. He will give you the strength. Life is worth living. Even the difficulties in life are worth going through. And we trust in God and ask him to help us in all of our needs. And I thank God, I'll leave it at this, that we live in an era of things like Advil and air conditioning and anesthesia. I mean, we have the opportunity to mitigate pain in ways that prior generations of humanity never even dreamed of. So we have an even easier time, if we can call it that, in terms of physical pain. This isn't true of emotional pain, that kind of thing. But here's the book I'd like to recommend. It's called Making Sense Out of Suffering by Dr. Peter Kraft, and it speaks directly to the kind of issues that would cause somebody to contemplate suicide.
Loneliness, I don't believe
fear.
It.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
That she is, but I think that she's had a number of her mother-in-law, her father-in-law, and she looks at me because I'm definitely on the long tooth and old side, and that it's difficult for her to watch those that she loves suffering. She's not understanding that suffering is essential and that there is dignity in it.
Yeah. Well, that's why, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt you, but that's why I'm recommending this particular book.
Uh-huh.
'Cause even if she herself is not you know, mm-hmm. feeling suicidal thoughts. It will help, I think it will help her understand how she can help them
mm-hmm.
by, even if she doesn't like hand them a copy of the book, if she assimilates the wisdom in this book, she'll be able to share that in her own way, is my thought.
And that author, one more time, I missed that.
Oh, his last name is Kreeft, K-R-E-E-F-T. Peter is his first name, Peter Kreeft.
Well, I will personally buy the book and have it shipped to her.
Oh, you're so kind.
I'm so determined. I'm so Catholic, as she would say.
Well, I love it. We need more people like you, Caroline, that's for sure.
Oh, well, God's been good. And as you said, we get through the dark times with him, and that does give us amazing strength. And we can reflect back and say, in its own way, that was a blessing.
That's true. I mean, I've had moments in my life, and probably you have too, where in the moment it was pretty grim, but you look back later and think, oh, well, something really good came from that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, Caroline.
So thank you so very much, Patrick. Have a blessed day.
Yeah, you too. Thank you. It just got a little more blessed because of our conversation. Thank you for that. Let's go to Bob now in the Salt Lake City area. Good morning, Bob.
Hey, good morning, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
Happy to.
I hope you can hear me okay.
I can, yeah. All the way from Salt Lake City. Yeah. I can hear you just fine.
Yeah, because I'm a truck driver and I've got a headset on, so I was kind of nervous. But anyway.
10-4, good buddy.
My theological question is about Mary and her sinlessness and the extent it was the case. I understood this in the sense of the Ark of the Covenant with the, mm-hmm. you know, the type the archetype, or the not the archetype, but with the Ark of the Covenant in the Old Testament, it was a prefigurement of her being the Ark for Christ. Uh-huh. And I was telling your call screener, really great guy, that I can see that, you know, what business does light have with darkness? That would be the case, because Christ would be inside of her, and that would make sense. However, I was trying to make sense out of Mary's being born that way. How could she inhabit her mother's womb if she were sinless? I was trying to understand this, and I'm not sure if it's an issue or not, but that was my question.
No, it's a good question. So the what does light have to do with darkness, or how can light and darkness coexist? That's the essence of
right.
this. Okay. Yeah, it makes complete sense. So I would say the following. Our Blessed Mother, it is true, as you know, she was preserved from all sin from the moment of her conception. And she lived for 9 months in the womb of her mother, as all unborn children do. And yet her mother was not free from all sin. But this is not the same thing as light and darkness. So the light and darkness motif that we see in the New Testament has to do with the life and light of Jesus, the life and light of God and his presence. It can't coexist with the darkness of sin, and specifically like serious intentional sin, grave sin, mortal sin. The two are incompatible. So I think the solution to this question with regard to the mother of Our Lady would be that she, although a sinner, as all of us are other than Our Lady, she was living a good, moral, upright, virtuous, faith-filled, obedient life. And so she wasn't in the state of mortal sin. I think we could reasonably presuppose that. She wasn't an enemy of God. She wasn't languishing in slavery to serious sin. She was a good, upright, moral, faithful woman of God. And so it's not the same as light and darkness in that regard. So Our Lady's sinlessness doesn't preclude the fact that she was within a mother who, in some sense, in a mild way, was subject to sin. That would be a different situation. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, makes perfect sense. And I thank you very much for answering my question. And before I let you go, I wanted to make call your attention to the email that I sent to you with the lemon twigs. on it. I don't know if you got it or not, but I sent you one with music because I know you're a big Beatles fan.
So, I am, and I do remember it, and I think you sent it to me yesterday or thereabouts.
Day or two. Yeah, good.
Yeah. I have it right here in front of me. You said, I know that like me, you are an avid Beatles fan. I would be remiss if I didn't share with you a link to the Lemon Twigs, a band who have been around since 2016, produce their own songs. Give it a listen. I'll be surprised if you don't like it. And the song you sent me is A Dream Is All I Know. So, yes, I have it right here, and I do intend to listen to it.
Excellent. I heard some others by them, and, you know, I'm going on 62,000 years of age here, so it's like these kids get it, man. These kids get it. I don't know how they do it, but the filters for their songs, you're going to hear so many influences, but it sounds like nothing you've ever heard before. That's the gift. So
I like it.
Anyway,
let me recommend to you, as long as I've got you, there's a Swedish band called Mellow Men, M-E-L-L-O-W-M-E-N. There are other bands throughout, you know, the last several decades who have had the same name, but this is a band from Sweden, and Mellow Men, and they have a band, they have a song called Make You Mine, and I'll bet you if you like the Beatles. And I haven't heard the music from Lemon Twig, but if you like that, I bet you'll like this. It's a modern Swedish band. Probably this song came out 10, 15 years ago. The song's called Make You Mine. Check it out.
Cool. One last thing. Can you send a reply to my email? Because I can't write anything down. I'm driving. Could you please send the name of the artist and the name of the song that you use for that awesome bumper music? The one that has the guitar twang in it. That down, down, down.
Oh. Sorry. Okay, you mean our show theme?
Yeah, yeah, I love it. Because I heard the discussion you had saying it's really ironic that I got a theme for the show that actually has something in it that's theological or that has a spiritual aspect to it. Got to go, got to get away. It was something like, get away from this bad environment. I can't remember the whole discussion.
I can explain that. I just sent you the email, and the song is called Move, and the band is called Saint Motel.
Saint Motel. All right. Yeah. Excellent.
Yeah, you got it. It's in your email box.
Yeah, all righty. You and Catholic Answers are the reason I am having this discussion and reverting back after playing the Prodigal Son for 30 at least 3 or 4 times. So.
Time to come home, Bob. Time to come home. Yeah. The door is wide open.
We'll welcome you.
So here's that song, Bob. It's called Move by Saint Motel. Yeah, maybe when I come back, I'll share a little bit about why I like this song so much and what is its message. Big time gratitude to Charity Mobile for sponsoring the Patrick Madrid Show. They're a pro-life cell phone company with nationwide coverage and no contracts. You can choose from the latest phones or bring your own. New customers can mention Patrick for a free phone or another offer. Info at charitymobile.com.
Patrick Madrid is on Coast to Coast on Relevant Radio.
Okay, we're back in action, because I'm an hombre de acción. 888-914-9149. What is this? Is this a movie? Is this?
Oh, you got to know this. Come on. All right, I grew up, I guess you would have been a dad that's like working all the time.
And oh, yeah.
You're not watching every movie that your kids are. This is the movie your kids and I were watching when we were kids.
It wasn't Tombstone.
It
didn't let my kids see that at first.
All right, it's Goonies.
Goonies.
It's a masterpiece.
Yeah.
So fun.
And that came out around the time of E.T.
It did, yeah. I don't know what came first, but it was all around that same era. I think Spielberg was involved.
I thought Cyndi Lauper did the song for that
movie. That's a different Goonies song.
Okay. Okay, fair enough. Well, I like when you take us down memory lane. 888-914-9149. Let's get back to the phones. How about Elena in Riverside, California? Hi, Elena.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
Yes, I'm right here. I can hear you loud and clear.
Thank you.
Hi there.
I have a question. So yesterday I was having a conversation with my 23-year-old college daughter, and she was really discussing the what's going on across the nation on all the universities and the protesting, which...
Okay. You mean the pro-Hamas, pro-Palestinian?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha.
Yes. And I forgive my ignorance because I don't even start to comprehend what's happening. And so we were just talking and I said, well, why do you think they're so angry? You know, what, I don't understand. I don't get it. And then she was just telling me like, well, she says, it's because, you know, we are the age that, you know, we're the generation where when we were kids, all these, mass shootings were happening at our elementary schools, and the nation, all they did for us was say, oh, we're sending you thoughts and prayers. She says, so why don't they just send their thoughts and prayers to, you know, instead of sending weapons and causing more deaths. And I was like, okay, I didn't know how to respond to that. I'm like, so I was just wondering what your thoughts are on that. And if you could just recommend anything for me to even, because I don't watch the news. I just don't watch it. And I don't start to even comprehend what's happening. It's too big for me. And I just want to know a little bit more so that I could, you know, have, I don't know, a more fruitful conversation.
Fair enough. Okay. I've got a few thoughts on that. So why don't we start with the slogan, thoughts and prayers. It is true. It has become a cultural cliche, thoughts and prayers. It's kind of like have a nice day. It very often is meaningless and trite. And although if you really do mean it, you know, it's just so de facto. It's so common now that people would say our thoughts and prayers are with the victims of the shooting, or our thoughts and prayers. And people are trying to say something nice. They're trying to say something polite, trying to say something respectful. But what has happened is that this phrase, which I would admit often is just an empty phrase, it's just a nicety, it has been turned into kind of an epithet, meaning that, oh, yeah, thanks for the thoughts and prayers, guys. In other words, it's an ironic epithet. Meaning that your thoughts and your prayers don't amount to anything. Your thoughts and your prayers don't accomplish anything. Your thoughts and your prayers are just a trite way of just saying something empty and polite, but you don't really mean it. I mean, different people would take that term and use it in different ways, but I've seen it used that way many times. Thoughts and prayers, you know, like, you know, ho-hum, that doesn't amount to anything. I'm guessing that's probably the way she meant that. Would that be right?
Yes.
Okay. So as far as these protests are concerned, in my viewing of them and seeing videos of them, and I saw a video just a couple of days ago of a young woman who was at, a college-aged girl, who was at one of these protests, you know, pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel protests. And she was asked by somebody who was like a man on the street just filming and interviewing, why are you here? And she didn't know. She didn't know why she was protesting. She didn't really even know what she was protesting. And she asked another girl near her who also didn't know. Now, how widespread is that? I don't know. But I think there are some young people who they get on the bandwagon because it's fashionable and it's the thing to do. Just like, remember the Black Lives Matter protests/riots, the demonstrations that very often led to destruction and violence and spray painting federal buildings and things like that. Remember how that was all the rage 2-3 years ago? And wherever you looked, you were seeing these Black Lives Matter protests, and nobody is doing any of that anymore. It was fashionable for a time, and then it fell out of fashion. And you used to see people with signs in their yards, Black Lives Matter, or they would have the bumper stickers, or they'd wear the T-shirts and things. And like many other things, it was all the rage for a time, and then people got tired of it, they got bored with it, and they moved on. This is the cause du jour right now because of what's happening in Gaza and the terrible situation with loss of life. You heard a guy call me the other day, if you were listening to the program, and he was hot under the collar, I'll tell you that. And he was just shouting and angry and whatnot, and wound up hanging up on me. But that's part of all of this. There is a kind of fury that people, in some cases, really kind of enjoy, because it lets them, it gives them a pretext for cutting loose with their anger and emotions and getting behind a cause that is very popular right now, especially among young people, that they don't necessarily fully understand. I would argue, based on what I've seen anecdotally, that many of them don't even really understand what it is that they're arguing for or against. What are they protesting for and against? And yet, because it's the thing to do, and people are some people, it appeals to them to be able to get out on the street and shout and demonstrate and be angry and curse and swear and try to bully people. For some people, that's very appealing. I'm not one of them. But that, too, is part of the dynamic. And there's also, I'll leave it at this, a relentless pressure on the part of those agitprop people who are promoting this on social media and elsewhere, who are kind of keeping this whipped into a frenzy as much as they can for as long as they can. And we'll see how this goes in the long run. But it's not uncommon for young people to be attracted to causes, something bigger than themselves, something where they can feel good about themselves. It's interesting. Jordan Peterson, I'll give you an example. Controversial figure, but I think he does a lot of good. I don't agree with everything he says. And, you know, he's like anyone else. He's, to my view, he does a lot of good, even if there are things that he might say that I wouldn't agree with. But he had you can look this up on YouTube, and this will exemplify what I'm talking about. His point, he was speaking at a college somewhere, and the angry young college student hecklers who were trying to talk over him or whatnot. There was one particular young woman that was trying to challenge him on this issue. And it wasn't the Hamas terrorist / Palestinian / Israel issue. It was something else. I don't remember what now. And his point to her was, the reason you want to do this kind of protesting and all that is because you're not willing to clean up the problems in your own life. You yourself have vices and issues and problems and things that you do in your own life that are wrong. And rather than address those issues, you can assuage your conscience. I'm just paraphrasing what he said. You can assuage your conscience, and because you can get all high and mighty and angry and righteously indignant and go out and shout and scream and demonstrate because of someone else's perceived or real problem, someone else's real or perceived injustice or sin. And it makes you feel good about yourself because you're screaming at somebody else for what you say he's doing wrong, and you never get around to addressing the sins and problems in your own life. And he basically pinned her ears to the wall. And she didn't have it. I think she walked away because she didn't have an answer for it. So that's another example. That's another dimension of this whole thing. I know there are people who truly believe that they're, you know, in the cause of what is right and just. And it is a complicated matter, to be sure, and neither party is perfect, certainly not Israel, certainly not those who are ruling the Palestinian people. But for some, they say, well, all your thoughts and all your prayers don't amount to anything else, so I'm going to go protest. Let me recommend, I've got to press on, but let me recommend a commentator who I think you will find very helpful. His name is Douglas Murray. Douglas Murray. So he's an author, but he's also a commentator, especially with regard lately, anyway, to what's going on in Israel with Gaza and the whole issue of Zionism and anti-Zionism and, you know, the Jews and all of that stuff. He's got some really incisive and trenchant commentary on this. You can look him up on YouTube. But his name, again, is Douglas Murray. He's a British intellectual, British author, etc. And if you're interested in following him on Twitter, it's Douglas K. Murray, M-U-R-R-A-Y. I think he brings a lot of clarity and a lot of common sense to these issues. And he's definitely pro-Israel, that's for sure. So I'll tell you that up front. But the way he dissects a lot of these conflicts and protests and things, I think is very helpful because he gets to the heart of some of these issues that escape the notice of many people. And I'll leave one final thing here, if you don't mind. I would propose that just as vapid and trite as thoughts and prayers often is, so is the slogans on the pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel people. That their slogans are just as shallow and just as trite and just as not effective in ways that they think they are as the thoughts and prayers is. It's like the reverse image of that. And I think Douglas Murray will be helpful to you in that regard. And share some of those videos with your daughter. Maybe it'll help her. 888-914-9149. And by the way, thank you for the call, Elena. Let's go to James in Philly now. Hi, James.
Hello, Patrick. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
I'm asking a question, please. I'd like to know how the best way is to break free of a pornography addiction.
Well, okay, let me ask you a couple questions. Is this some you're asking for yourself, I presume?
Yeah.
Okay. How long standing is the problem?
3 years.
3 years?
20.
Oh, 20 years. I just couldn't quite hear you. 20 years?
Yeah.
Okay. Are you married?
No.
Okay. So you're dealing with what sounds like a compulsion, and it's perhaps you've tried to stop, but you can't, or you stop for a time and you go back, something like that?
Yes.
Okay. Well, there are a number of issues here. One would be your own willingness to change. So if we substitute pornography addiction to alcohol addiction, let's look at what does one do to overcome alcohol addiction or alcoholism. First is you've got to say, I don't want to do this anymore, and get help. And often for most people, it involves a 12-step program like AA. So they go to a place where they can talk it through. They can hear from other people who are achieving sobriety. They can learn strategies. You know, how do I deal with temptation? How do I, you know, what do I do when I really, really, really want to drink and I know I shouldn't do it? What do I do? That's where those kind of programs can be helpful. And thankfully, James, there is such a program and you'll be able to tap into it where you are in Philadelphia. It's called Catholic in Recovery. Are you Catholic? I mean, it doesn't even matter if you're Catholic, but
oh, yeah.
Ideally. Okay. So they have parish-based meetings, much like an AA meeting. And their website is catholicinrecovery.com. And they take a 12-step approach to conquering and being free from this addiction. It's not just pornography. They also deal with drugs and alcohol. But sexual addiction, pornography addiction is certainly part of it. And that would be one thing I would strongly recommend that you do. If you haven't had any success trying to do this on your own, then try that. And their okay. website also has some other resources. Now, there are other authors. I mean, there are, I should say, authors who have written good books on the topic, and there are any number of them out there. If you do a little Googling or go on Amazon and look for Catholic books on pornography addiction, you'll find plenty, and they're good, they're helpful. But if you're not finding the results you're looking for, it sounds like you need to be part of a group where they can help you, and they will help you.
All right. Okay.
A few other right. things. Few other things, okay? I strongly recommend that if you have been going to confession and you find yourself backsliding over and over again, continue going to confession. Don't stop going to confession. And don't listen to that little voice that says, why bother? You're going to do it again anyway. Don't go to confession. Don't listen to that voice, because that's the voice of the devil who doesn't want you to go to the sacraments. So keep going. Keep, you know, toughing it out. Ask God to help you. And here's a secret weapon. Pray the rosary every day. And I'll tell you why this is going to be very useful to you. If you make a commitment to Jesus and Mary that you will pray the rosary every single day for the rest of your life without exception, I mean every single day, and you make that commitment, you know what will happen? Is that you're going to feel so weird praying the rosary because you made the commitment. If you're in the state of mortal sin and you're looking at pornography, it's going to make you feel so weird that you're going to stop doing it, because you're going to say, I don't want to feel weird like this. I want to be close to God. And Our Lady will help you in a very particular way. So pray the rosary every day. And it's like Roundup on that weed.